Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, March 4th, 2024. The former rebels of the SPLM-IO say they will boycott the upcoming elections if certain conditions are not met.
Given the fact that we are left with only 9 months to the deadline for elections as in the roadmap, and you have all these pending tasks not implemented, it is impossible for RT Gonu now to hold elections come 22nd December 2024. Unless if they are looking for a sham election.
And the Secretary General of the SPLM, loyal to President Kiir, says Riek Machar's followers are afraid of polls.
Now, the fear of the elections cannot be construed to mean that there is no environment for elections. I think what the SPLM-IO is saying is something that we have known for a long time, that they have not been truthful and they have not been ready and they have not been willing to participate in elections.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement, in opposition, a major party to the country's 2018 peace agreement, is threatening to boycott the December elections. SPLM-IO senior members say for transparent, democratic, free, fair and credible elections to take place, some key provisions of the peace agreement should be implemented. They also blame the Kiir administration for not giving a political space. The Secretary General of the SPLM faction led by President Salva Kiir accused the SPLM-IO of looking for excuses to prolong the transition. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Oyet Nathaniel Perino, the deputy chairperson of the SPLM-IO, says after evaluating the peace deal's implementation, the SPLM-IO Political Bureau has decided that elections will only take place once the prerequisites for conducting peaceful, fair and democratic elections are put in place. He says other provisions have passed their timeline of implementation to guarantee credible elections this year.
The SPLM-IG and the SPLM-IO must dialogue and get a way forward to this. Because we are now sure that given the fact that we are left with only 9 months to the deadline for elections as in the roadmap, and you have all these pending tasks not implemented, it is impossible for RT Gonu now to hold election come 22nd December 2024. Unless if they are looking for a sham election, unless if they are just looking to abrogate the agreement, which will throw the country into confusion.
Peter Lamboth, the Secretary General of Sudan's People's Liberation Movement faction, led by President Salva Kiir, says his party is ready for the elections. He says SPLM-IO, loyal to first Vice President Riek Machar, are looking for ways to remain in government by extending the transitional period.
Now, the fear of the elections cannot be construed to mean that there is no environment for elections. I think what the SPLM-IO is saying is something that we have known for a long time, that they have not been truthful and they have not been ready and they have not been willing to participate in elections because they know their political position in the country. Any party has the legal right to boycott an election.
Hoyet adds that SPLM-IO has been denied access for places to hold rallies. He also asserts that some party officials have been prevented from visiting other states.
Up to now, we have been denied access to the administrative areas. We cannot participate there. And somebody is planning to hold elections. We are asking what kind of election is this? And to us, on this basis, election is already rigged. Should you prevent other parties from participating in other parts of the country? Should you prevent other parties from moving around the country, conducting their business? Already, this is an irregularity, even before you hold elections. That's why these are prerequisites that must be cleared before you talk of any elections.
Lam says SPLM-IO as a party has the right to sit out the elections if they are not prepared. He also says guaranteeing political parties access to villages in all 10 states works both ways. He accuses the SPLM-IO of denying the party loyal to President Kiir entry to Panyijar, a village controlled by the SPLM-IO.
They have offices in all the 10 states of South Sudan. So if there's no political space, how did they open them? They have been holding their rallies in the 10 states. And there are certain places where it may be difficult for maybe local communities there are not willing for IO to do a rally there. That is an isolated issue. issue. The same thing with us, the SPLM. It has never been easy for SPLM to open our offices and to hold rallies in counties that are under SPLM-IO.
Zahara Said, Executive Director for the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, Sunde, a local non-profit, is urging the signatories to the 2018 peace deal to reflect on the suffering of South Sudanese.
Since the birth of South Sudan, we have never gone for elections. We have a bloated government. For how long are we going to have a bloated government? For how long are our civil servants' salaries going to be delayed because of the bloated government? If he really loves South Sudan, he should rethink, he should pressurize the other signatories to implement the remaining provisions. The timeline is overdue, but South Sudan is a country of miracles. If they have goodwill and they love South Sudan, all these things can go simultaneously.
Wani Steven, a South Sudanese lawyer, says the country must hold elections to usher in new leaders.
The agreement was not designed to be extended every now and then. The agreement was designed in a way that it will come to an end. It should and it will come to an end. And it will come to an end by us, South Sudanese, conducting an election. Because there are people who were born in this country. They have never voted. You know, they have never chosen people who are representing them, be it in the parliament, be it the governors, be it the state parliaments, be it the commissioner, even the president. And this is the time that the people of South Sudan want to choose who are supposed to lead them.
Parties to the revitalized peace deal extended the transitional government's period for 2 years, arguing that they need more time to complete key provisions of the agreement, including drafting a constitution and full unification of the army before February 2023. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Sudan, where efforts to broker a peace in the country are still ongoing, but negotiations have been stalled since the warring factions ended their last round of talks in December in the Saudi Arabian city of Jeddah. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more.
Late last month, Libya's Prime Minister Abdelhamid Dbeibah proposed a mediation initiative to achieve a ceasefire in Sudan. The commanders of the two warring sides, Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Commander of the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, visited Libya and met with Dbeibah, both men expressing their commitment to peace. Details of the initiative and the outcomes of the meetings remain undisclosed. Sudanese political groups continue to advocate for ceasefire negotiations and a political settlement to end the brutal conflict that has killed thousands of civilians. Walid Abanor is the head of the group Alliance for Freedom and Change. He recently spoke to the Associated Press in Port Sudan.
The Alliance for Freedom and Change supports any measures aimed at ending the conflict, stopping bloodshed, and the restoring of normalcy for the people of Sudan. We endorse the Sudan Peace Initiative proposed by the Libyan Government of National Unity. We are also following other initiatives and negotiating platforms that call for an end to the armed conflict in Sudan.
Sudan's conflict broke out on April 15 last year when Khartoum residents woke up to the sound of heavy gunfire and explosions between the Sudan Armed Forces, or SAF, and the paramilitary group RSF. The fighting quickly expanded to other areas across the country. Although leaders of both warring parties say they want to achieve a ceasefire and resolve the crisis, intense fighting continues in the capital city of Khartoum and other areas. According to some observers, the willingness of Al-Burhan and Dagalo to resume ceasefire negotiations is not strong. Both commanders hope to gain a certain advantage on the battlefield before restarting any peace talks. Nabil Biagio, Washington.
Washington, we go to Rumbek, where some residents of Lake State Capital Rumbek say they are grappling with impact of a decision by traders to close their shops after state authorities forced them to reduce commodity prices in the markets. State officials proposed their own prices, but traders rejected and closed their shops in protest, leaving residents scrambling to find food items for sale. William Sandemabor spoke to some residents in Rumbek and traders and has this report from Nairobi.
Rumbek town Angelina Adel Malwal has been searching for basic food items in the market. She says most families feel desperate as they struggle to keep up with the high cost of living across South Sudan. Malwal says some families are not able to put food on the table for their loved ones because food prices have doubled.
There is too much effect on closure of the shops in Dumbek Market. The market has been closed for almost a week, and I witnessed it myself because I was looking for some goods. They have been refusing. Like yesterday, I was looking for a maize flour, but they said, no, it is not there in the store. How come it is not there? It is only that they do not want to sell these goods. The issue of sugar, I asked the other guy yesterday, why are you saying there's no sugar and the sugar is here? Because I was in the shop. And then he said, you know what, Angelina? We bought this sugar at this amount, which he mentioned to me. And if I sell it at this price, it's going to affect me a lot.
Malwal says the scarcity of food has affected most ordinary citizens like herself.
It has a lot of effect to me, even to the other normal citizen who cannot afford to buy a cup of sugar at that amount that they put it. The life is terrible. Even me, I thought of it today. I was just asking myself, what is really going on? It is not only Lake State alone, but particularly the whole of South Sudan.
Dumbek Town resident Matthew Makir Joseph told this program he has been looking for flour and sugar for 5 days. Economist Kerinyot Albino blames the government for using what he calls the wrong approach for cutting food prices. Albino says the decision of the state government could embolden the black market, leading to even higher prices.
There was a wrong approach used by an administration through local act of the market control and market management. If at all there was a need for the establishment of the market rules and regulation, and also knowing what are the challenges facing business community, the first approach would have been used is to call them first for the meeting. Such that they are asked to line out what are the problems facing them and why are they doubling prices to that extent. This one was not done.
Albino says the state should not force traders to reduce their prices, but instead engage in a dialogue with them to set the fair prices.
It is not to force the business community to reduce prices by force. It is to assess first, knowing the prices of different commodities, whether they are produced within or imported from other countries. Because we, the South Sudanese, we don't have independent agriculture that is producing within. We depend on different countries that we bring in goods from other countries. And 3/4 of the business community here are the foreigners. That makes matters worse. Should not them be forced automatically to reduce prices?
Some residents of Rumbek say the state government efforts to mitigate rising prices of food items has created another acute shortage of food commodities. They are calling on the national government to intervene. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Nairobi, Kenya.
Some residents of Juba have mixed reactions about the requirement that patients first fill out what is known as a medical form aid before proceeding to receive medical services for injuries related to criminal activity. Residents who spoke to VOA say health workers at Juba Teaching Hospital demand form aid from victims of motor accidents and violence incidents, adding that the process delays treatment and has led to some deaths. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Deputy Inspector of Police has ordered that medical form aid be completed in all cases arising out of criminal acts. The order says completing the form is mandatory if a case is to be pursued in court, and says the form could be done during the investigation. Police issued form aid to those involved in motor accidents, victims of assaults and other crimes so they can be treated at government-run hospitals. Juba resident Daniel Machek says after a recent motor vehicles accident, he rushed his brother to Juba Teaching Hospital, but some health workers refused to treat him because he did not have form aid from the police. Machek says he was fortunate to get a form and that saved his brother's life. He says problems getting a form aid could mean some patient died without treatment.
We could save a lot of lives if we get to know how to deal with this form aid. I'm not saying remove form aid, and I know it's a view of very many other people, but why should it be a pre-treatment condition? So it's something that we can control. The first priority should be let's save life first. For me, it's just a favor that can be filled.
Elia Moses, another Juba resident, says the requirements for form aid should be abolished across the country.
From my experience, it's kind of weird because this patient already has the form aid, and then It was filled and was still left on the floor unattended. So it beats my understanding as being a government hospital. When a victim gets accident like this, he's supposed to be attended immediately. Then than giving it time and allow this person bleed and get weak. Maybe in course of this overbleeding kind of incidents, the person dies off. And the form aid itself, if a bold statement is made about it, it is not there in the system, it as well as affects the treatment process.
Brigadier Samuel Well, director of Munuki Police Western Division, says there are a lot of misconceptions among the public on the use and importance of form aid. Well denies allegation that processing the form involves delays and that it is not required at every medical facility and it is not required in emergency cases.
When you are injured, you come to me here, I always give it to officers that are working, they feel it, and you go directly to the hospital. You are also escorted if it is a big injury, whether you are injured by accident or you are beaten. You can be escorted so that you cannot go and take it to someone also to go and feel it wrongly. We have a specific hospital, this like Juba Teaching Hospital. These are the places where we take form aid, not every clinic. So it has nothing to do with the delay, man. If it is a delayman, that delayman comes in other ways, not because of form aid.
He says form aid could guide judges as they rule in criminal cases.
It is not a precondition. Medical services are quite, there are so many medical services. If you say somebody is having any other criminal case apart from injury, you are taken, got it directly to the hospital. But if it is injured, it is necessary that you will be given form aid. There are periods mentioned here in the, whether it is you are given 7 days, these days will also guide the judicial people. This is the reason of form aid.
A health official at Juba Teaching Hospital, who prefers to be anonymous because he was not authorized to speak to the media, says Form 8 gives a green light to health workers to treat victims of accidents or crimes. He says the hospital has not received any directives to stop the use of Form 8, adding that a patient has Form 8, it means he or she has been cleared by police to seek medical care.
When a person is given form aid, then the doctor must attend to him or her immediately, because that is a guarantee to the doctor that crime has been exempted by the police. But for the order, we don't have any problem. We can obey the order as it is, because the side effect of the order is the only point we can tell you. The side effect of such an order is that it will delay treatment.
In 2018, former Minister of Health Riaggai Kok cancelled the requirement that form aid must be completed before care is given in emergencies. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a group in Ghana is teaching deaf students journalism. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Voters in the United States, in dozens of states, head to the polls on Tuesday to choose their party's presidential nominee. Over the weekend, all candidates ramped up their criticism of their challenges and spelled out their priorities to voters. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Voters in 15 U.S. states and American Samoa will head to the polls on Tuesday to indicate whom they favor as their party's nominee in the November presidential election. Democratic President Joe Biden and Republican predecessor Donald Trump are each expected to draw closer to securing their party's nomination. Former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley, who is trailing Trump for her party nomination, told NBC's Meet the Press Sunday she'll continue in the race for as long as voters want her to be.
They'll show it in their votes. They'll show it in their donations. My focus is we need to start respecting taxpayer dollars. We need to reduce the size of government. We need to secure our borders and be a country of law and order. And we believe in peace through strength.
Immigration is also among the topics that former President Trump chose to focus on ahead of what it's known as Super Tuesday.
Not one more innocent American life should be lost to migrant crime. Got to stop it. You have to get out the vote because we have to send big numbers up for November 5th. We have to let them know that we're a freight train and we're going and we're not stopping.
President Biden, who visited the Texas border last week, accuses Trump of scuttling a bipartisan border security bill. This past Saturday, First Lady Jill Biden shed light on another topic that she argues voters should consider ahead of Super Tuesday, women's reproductive rights.
He's considering a national abortion ban. Donald Trump is dangerous to women and to our families. We simply cannot let him win.
President Biden is all but guaranteed to be his party's nominee. On the Republican side, Trump needs to secure at least 1,215 delegates to officially secure the nomination. It could take several days for all of Tuesday's results to be formally announced. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
For students with a disability, career options can appear limited. But in Ghana, one journalist is using photojournalism to encourage students at a deaf school to broaden their horizons. For VOA News, Sinanu Todd reports from Sevalugu, Ghana.
At 17 years old, Job Nimbi has never spoken a word. Born with speech and hearing disabilities, Nimbi and others at this Ghana school instead found their voices through photography. Nimbi says he is happy to share his life journey with the world through photos, and he wants to inspire others who live with disabilities. But Nimbi and his peers face significant challenges, including discrimination. Other hurdles are limited training and resources. Ghana's Statistical Service estimates only a fraction of the children with a hearing disability are able to pursue a higher education. Yet, Nimbi remains resolute.
So now, what I'm learning and focusing on is to become a doctor.
Photography was introduced to the Sevalugu School for the Deaf by Geoffrey Buta. The award-winning photojournalist is on a campaign to amplify marginalized voices through visual storytelling. His project, Photo for Change, has one focus.
Train people, assist people to tell their own story in the community they find themselves, and as well as using photography or visuals to address societal issues.
Buta's Photo Club offers classes on photojournalism. In less than a year, students can take professional quality pictures by themselves and write captions.
So with the power of photography, they can tell stories around them. They can become visual journalists in the future. They can become broadcasters.
The teachers also benefit, with the club providing easy access to visual learning materials.
You have seen a picture somewhere that has connection with what you are going to deliver, the lesson you're going to deliver. And so you use the camera to take that photo, bring it to the class, and then show it to the children. Then you can develop your lesson from there.
Buta plans to expand his project to 10 more schools in Ghana and create exhibitions to showcase students' work. Other plans include setting up internship with media outlets. And in the long term, he wants to inspire a generation of students with disabilities to become award-winning photojournalists. Sinanu Todd, VOA News, Sevalugu, Ghana.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, March 4th, 2024. We now leave you with the song Dodo by Alia Kiba. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Chang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kimondo oh, na majungu ya kibongo na usiape time ya kutibu inyongo no.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the Sudanese Armed Forces' recent decision to prohibit cross-border humanitarian assistance from Chad, and reports that the Sudanese Armed Forces is obstructing assistance from reaching communities in areas controlled by the Rapid Support Forces. We are also concerned that the Rapid Support Forces are looting homes, markets, and humanitarian assistance warehouses in areas under their control, and that both sides are harassing humanitarian workers and hindering delivery of life-saving aid, said State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller in a statement. He called on both the Sudanese Armed Forces and Rapid Support Forces to immediately allow unhindered humanitarian assistance deliveries to all parts of Sudan. U.S. Ambassador to Sudan John Godfrey, in a recent briefing, expressed deep concern about the worsening humanitarian situation in Sudan.
I wanted to highlight a UN OCHA report that estimated that there are more than 6.2 million Sudanese who have been internally displaced since the fighting began last April, and about 1.8 million further Sudanese who are refugees in neighboring countries, which makes this the largest displacement crisis anywhere in the world at the moment. At the same time, acute food insecurity affects about 17.7 million Sudanese, 5 to 6 million of whom may face starvation as early as May.
The Sudanese Armed Forces and Rapid Support Forces are obligated under international humanitarian law to protect civilians and facilitate humanitarian deliveries to meet the needs of civilians. The United States applauds the courageous efforts of organizations throughout Sudan responding to the needs of their most vulnerable fellow citizens. The United States strongly condemns actions by the Sudanese Armed Forces and Rapid Support Forces, as well as some civilian officials, to constrain civic space, restrict access to internet and mobile phone networks, stoke inter-ethnic conflict, and criminalize groups providing support for communities harmed by conflict. Vilification of individuals who call for stopping the fighting has surged, noted spokesperson Miller. Those targeted include resistance committees, pro-peace activists, community leaders, humanitarian actors, medical personnel, journalists, and political party members. We unequivocally condemn these acts, as well as pervasive rape, torture, and other reprehensible violations against Sudanese civilians, declared spokesperson Miller. Sudanese civilians must be free to organize themselves to establish a civilian government that truly represents the Sudanese people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.